The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual domestic and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Sarah for bringing Kaisha's story to my attention. Kaisha's story is one of extreme generational system failure, which resulted in multiple children in this family losing their lives. Kaisha's sweet little face won the hearts of a nation and brought to the forefront gaps in legislation and child protection procedure. August 2000, Western Sydney, Australia. Kaisha's stepfather woke one morning to find the six-year-old missing from her bed and the front door wide open. The little girl's mother making a frantic call to emergency services. This would mark the beginning of an investigation into one of the most shocking and appalling crimes Australia has ever seen. This is Kaisha's story.
A second day of searching has failed to show any sign of missing six-year-old Kaisha Abrahams.
10 crime reporter Daniel Sutton joins us now. Dan, do police have any fresh clues?
Well, Bill, the homicide squad has now joined this investigation, and while Kaisha Abraham's family only reported her missing yesterday, police are now investigating reports that she may have been missing for up to 2 or 3 weeks. Now, today the police search operation focused on an area of bushland about 4 kilometres from here as about 50 volunteers search for any trace of this little girl who appears to have simply vanished.
Christy Abrahams' life was marred by domestic violence, both witnessed and experienced at the hands of her father. Directly because of the violence caused by her father, Christy's mother developed epilepsy. And after her father left, a still very young Christy became a full-time carer for both her mother and baby brother. When Christy was just 10 years old, she heard her mother having a seizure and was unable to save her, leaving Christy and her 3-year-old brother to enter the foster care system. After this point, Christy would spend time in different group homes and with foster families. As she entered her teenage years, Christy was assessed by a psychologist, who determined that due to an intellectual disability, she needed to be with an appropriate family who could provide her with the correct emotional support. But this would never happen, and by age 16, Christy was living in a girls' refuge, and then in her own government housing apartment at age 18. When Christy was 19 years old, she met Chris Whippart through his younger brother Matthew. Chris and Christy quickly entered into a serious romantic relationship, and it wouldn't be long before Christy would become pregnant with their first child. Very early on in the pregnancy, Chris found Christy punching herself in the stomach after an argument between the couple and threatening to abort the baby. After this, though, things seemed to settle, and the pregnancy continued as normal without any complications. This was despite Christy smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol throughout her pregnancy. February 6, 2003. Christy gave birth to a little boy who they named Aiden. The Department of Children's Services, or DOCS as we'll refer to them in this episode. DOCS visited the home and nothing seemed of concern. Nothing, except Christy had been giving Aiden one scoop of baby formula instead of two. But only 2 weeks later, things seemed to have gone downhill fast, and Christy was not coping with motherhood. An argument between Chris and Christy ended with the police being called. Chris meeting the officers out the front of the apartment, quote, "I'm Aiden's dad. His mother's not coping and she mixes her medication. She threw my clothes and stereo off the balcony last night and threw a lit candle at me while she had Aiden in her arms. The wax went everywhere and nearly burned him. She is up all night with Aiden and has threatened to throw him off the balcony if he doesn't shut up and go to sleep. I don't know what to do." Unquote. When police attempted to enter the home to make sure Christy and Aiden were okay, Christy refused to open the door. But after talking to a DOCS caseworker, this police officer was under the belief that Aiden would be removed from Christy's care the following day. But this never happened, and 6 weeks later, Aiden would be found dead in his crib. March 22, 2003. Chris's mother Liz was awoken by the panicked sounds of her son pounding on the door. He had rode his bicycle over with horrifying news, quote, "Aiden's blue and he's dead and he's cold." "Christy's up there screaming and screaming, Mum. I found him and he was on his face," unquote. Liz went with Chris back to the couple's apartment and found Christy sitting in Aiden's bedroom holding the baby. She was screaming that Aiden was cold and needed another blanket. 6-week-old Aiden was rushed to hospital, but there was nothing that could be done. The baby's autopsy found no signs of abuse, and his cause of death was listed as unascertained. But that, quote, "If the matter had not been reportable, it would have been classified as a sudden infant death syndrome," unquote. It must be said, though, that sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS, is not a medical diagnosis, but it's a term that's given when an infant's death is unknown and not suspicious. But it must also be said that babies under 6 months old, it is almost impossible to determine between a SIDS-related death and suffocation. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from this week's sponsor. Advertisements in podcasts are a necessary evil. It allows the podcast to remain accessible for everyone and allows me to produce one, sometimes two, episodes every week. Discover why Stephen King is raving about the blockbuster new thriller from New York Times bestselling author Emiko Jean. He says The Return of Ellie Black is a page-turning suspense novel, a shrewd character study, and a captivating mystery all at the same time. I couldn't put it down until I'd experienced every last twist and turn. Detective Chelsea Calhoun's life is turned upside down when she gets the call Ellie Black, a girl who disappeared years earlier, has resurfaced in the woods of Washington State. But Ellie's reappearance forces Chelsea to ask questions with deadly answers. Read The Return of Ellie Black by Emiko Jean, available wherever books are sold. Just over a year later, Kaisha Abrahams was born April 22, 2004 in Mount Druitt, Western Sydney, to parents Christy Abrahams and Chris Whippart. And for the first year in Kaisha's life, things seemed to be great with the young family. Christy truly bonded with her daughter, and her and Chris's relationship seemed stable. But it wouldn't be long before the couple would again start arguing, and Christy would tell Chris their relationship was over for good and he needed to leave the apartment. As Chris was packing his belongings, he saw Christy grab a now-crawling 15-month-old Kaisha by the neck. She carried her to the living room where she dumped her on the sofa. When Kaisha started crawling again towards her, Christy picked her daughter up and bit her on the shoulder. Kaisha screamed. Chris immediately left and called the police. When police attended to the home and asked Christy what happened, she claimed the toddler bit her, so she bit her back. However, Christy had no mark to support her story. Christy would plead guilty to assault and received a 12-month bond. Kaisha was removed and placed initially into Chris's care. However, due to drug use allegations on Christy's part, docs removed Kaisha from Chris's custody and put her into foster care where she was apparently content and happy. Christy received supervised visits, completing all the steps necessary to get her daughter back. She attended anger management classes and entered into a parental care plan. Although Christy could not keep herself out of trouble for long, because on October 15, 2006, Christy was arrested for having outstanding warrants for traffic offences, driving on a suspended licence. Now, some might take all of this to indicate she did not have her act together to be a mother, but docs would not agree. Because 2 months later, docs returned Kaisha to her mother's care. It had been 18 months since Kaisha last lived with Christy. A year after Kaisha was returned, Christy was heavily pregnant with her third child, another daughter. A nurse noticed a bruise to three-year-old Kaisha's face and reported the injury to docs. When questioned by a caseworker the next day, Kaisha couldn't say how she got the bruise, but pointed out a cigarette burn on her body. Quote, "Mum hit there. Mum did that." Unquote. Despite this, no further action was taken. At this point, Christy was in a new relationship with a man named Robert Smith. By June 2010, she would be pregnant with his child, his first, her fourth. And this was when she called her father crying and angry. She was cursing and asking him to take Kaisha off her. Quote, "I am sick of her. She shits and pisses the bed. She plays up at school. I will hurt her. I really will hurt her. I will kill her." Unquote. But then Christy would change her mind on July 10th when her father turned up to pick up his granddaughter. That she now wanted Kaisha to stay a few weeks longer to spend time with her new baby brother. This would be the last time Kaisha would be seen by anyone outside of Christy and Robert. August 1st, 2010. Christy Abrahams and Robert Smith made a panicked and tearful phone call to 000, Australia's emergency services. They needed to report Christy's six-year-old daughter missing. They claimed they had woken up only a half an hour earlier to find the front door of the apartment open and Kaisha nowhere to be found.
"Hi, I've just gotten up and I went to the toilet. And I said my front door was open and my daughter's not here."
"Just get the police on their way out there, okay? How old is your daughter?"
"She's six."
"She's six?
Yes."
"Have you checked all the units?"
No, I've just gotten up."
"Okay, what's your name?"
"Christy, I'm her mum."
"Okay, Christy, what's your last name?"
"Abraham."
"What's your daughter's name?"
"Kaisha."
"What is it?"
"Kaisha."
"Spell it."
K-I-E-S-H-A.
"Yep, okay. So she, as far as you know, she would be in her pyjamas, or you don't know?"
Yes, she's in her pyjamas."
"Okay. So what time would you have last seen her? Last night?"
I put her to bed at 9:30, 9:45.
"And do you have any other family that live in the unit block?"
"No,
Any neighbours that she would talk to?"
No.
"I've just let the police know. We've got police. We've got everybody on their way out to see you, okay?"
"Yeah.
"And she's never done this?"
"No, she gets up and plays, in the middle of the night. She looks at her, I'm a corner at her window before we went over, but I don't know.
"Yeah. Okay. And is it just the two of you that live there?"
"I've got a two-year-old and a three-week-old baby."
"And are they still there?"
"Yeah, they're still here."
"They're still there?"
"Yes. And the kid's father, he as well."
"He's there as well?"
"Looking for her."
"Okay. Now, Christy, we have got everybody on their way out there."
"Yeah."
"So he's out yelling the streets for us?"
Yeah, he's gone looking for her.
What's his name?
Robert.
Robert?
Yeah, Robert.
Robert who?
Smith.
And you've looked in all the cupboards?
Yeah, he's not here. I looked everywhere.
Christy and Robert told police they went out searching the streets around their home as soon as they discovered the little girl missing. Christy theorising that Kyesha left the home herself to go play with the stray kittens that lived in the neighbourhood. Christy told police she had put Kyesha to bed around 9:30 the night before after watching the movie The Golden Compass together. That Kyesha was wearing pink pyjamas and a purple pumpkin patch jacket. As police arrived at the scene, they knew time was of the essence. We all know that the first few hours of a missing child investigation are critical in finding them safe and well. A large-scale search was conducted by police and volunteers, scouring bushland, parks and reserves, all in the hopes they would find some trace of the missing girl. Investigators spoke to Kyesha's biological father, Chris, because statistically, a significant percentage of missing children from separated parents are a custodial issue. And there was this hope that when they would speak to Chris, they would find Kyesha. But he would be quickly cleared. He had been in hospital having a toe amputated due to a medical complication from his diabetes. All available resources were dedicated to finding Kyesha, and Strike Force Garrison was formed. And this was when some bombshells were uncovered. Investigators discovered 6-year-old Kyesha had attended school only 4 days since the school year commenced in February. That's 4 days and 6 months. To make things more concerning, no one could report seeing Kyesha since July 10, 2010, 3 weeks before she was reported missing. And this was when Christy was in contact with her father to take custody of Kyesha. But what's happened in those 3 weeks between Kyesha being last seen and being reported missing became of interest for investigators as they worked to form a timeline.
Can't describe how it's been. You don't know until you put yourself in my shoes. Just hope that she's found as soon as possible. That's what we mean. Safe, well.
How hard is it for you the longer this goes?
It gets harder by the minute. She's always happy, bubbly, you know, loved playing, you know, just like any kid would.
2 days after Kyesha was reported missing, Christy and Robert made a public appeal for someone to come forward with their daughter, for her to be returned home safe and sound.
Rob, do you have any idea that anyone who you might know who may have taken Christy, does the family obviously thought about, long and hard about this, does anyone have any idea?
I have no idea. If I had any idea, mate, we'd be there looking.
The police have expressed hope. Obviously, everyone is hopeful. And that's one thing you've got to hold on to.
Definitely.
They want to see her. Can I please go to the police?
We all love her and we all miss her. And if she can hear or see it, get to a phone or ring the police. We want her to come back safely.
Do anything in your power to please come back home.
Kyesha's adorable little face touched the community, and residents were willing to do anything they could to help find her alive. Candlelight vigils were held with flowers and toys laid out for the missing girl. However, the same public would become increasingly suspicious of Christy and Robert's behaviour and lack of involvement in searching for Kyesha. What initially appeared as a desperate mother and stepfather waiting for any news that would lead them to Kyesha, that facade quickly began to crack. Neither made any effort to join the searchers. And despite her daughter was missing, Christy seemed to behave as if nothing was amiss. Then she moved house, which really seemed to get the armchair sleuths talking. What if Kyesha found her way home and her mum wasn't there? And every time Christy fronted the media, she had her nails done and new hair extensions with red streaks. Robert took to pelting reporters' cars with eggs, all the while Christy would just laugh and encourage him. Despite the rumours circulating them, Christy and Robert maintained their innocence. Neighbour and friend Alison Anderson would become a spokesperson of sorts for the couple. She would be their biggest advocate during this time. Quote, "The family wished to deny the recent allegations in the media. The family encouraged the public to come forward with any information that may assist police to find Kaisha. But please stop making baseless allegations. The family wish to be left alone to deal with this situation. You put yourself in their shoes. You couldn't imagine, and that's why this is a time where they need their friends and support and family." Unquote. We are just going to take another quick break now for a word from this week's sponsors.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
As the investigation into Kaisha's disappearance continued, a forensic team descended on the home where the little girl had lived. Here, something disturbing was revealed. Blood belonging to the missing child was found in every room. Christy Abrahams was brought in by police for questioning.
What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying that when we forensically examined the unit, there's an amount of Kaisha's blood throughout the unit. And I'm just trying to ask you... Ask you how that would have got there.
I don't know.
No? Okay.
We're talking about the park around in Woodstock?
Yes, right next door.
Right next door?
Yes.
Okay, so for Robert to end up in Westfield at Mount Druitt, is that unusual?
What do you mean?
Well, Robert's, when he's left your unit, he's gone into Westfield, all the way to Westfield, and looked inside Westfield.
Like he's looked all the way where we walked down to Westfield.
Yeah, but you don't take her to the shops.
I do, like...
Now, I've been through a whole week of her life, and she hasn't left the unit.
So what are you trying to say?
No, what I'm trying to say is, why did he end up down in Mount Druitt Shopping Centre?
But he looked all around and to go to Mount Druitt.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that you don't take care of shopping. Why would she go there? She's never been there, has she?
She has. Maybe not the week that you're talking about. Oh, you know what? This is over, seriously, because what are you trying to get at?
All right, I'll move on. All I'm saying is, Robert, why did he go to Westfield? That's all I'm asking. It's a simple
question.
So
have a look. You would have seen, you would have got the CT.
But it's a long way from where you are. That's all.
We're just trying to get to the bottom of this. You're very angry.
Yeah, well.
At us. We're going to get to the bottom of what's happened to her.
Yeah, and I hope you do, because, mate, I need to know.
I think everybody needs to know.
So what are you trying to say, that we did something to her?
I didn't say that.
Over the months that followed, the community continued to hold on to the hope that somehow Kaisha was still alive. Unfortunately, 9 months after she was reported missing, that hope would come crashing down. And 6-year-old Kaisha Abrahams would be found dead. April 22, 2011. Police would make the shocking announcement 2 people had been arrested for Kaisha Abrahams' disappearance and murder. That Christy Abrahams and Robert Smith had been charged after a months-long undercover operation. That Christy had cried in her hotel room to an undercover officer while she confessed. That night, Kaisha was refusing to put her pajamas on. In response, Christy said she nudged Kaisha with her foot. Kaisha jumped back, fell, and hit her head on a wooden bed frame. Quote, and then she went funny, and then I put her in the shower to try and wake her up. She just started making weird noises. We thought it would go away. We really did. Unquote.
Base of the bed, like there's a bit of timber, and she's hit her head on that.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's when you say that you did what? You took her in the shower then?
Yes, I've been trying to wake her up. I got the cold water on her, trying to wake her up, but she wouldn't.
The suitcase, now, I need to know.
He buried it, dug a hole, and then we went there, and he put her in there.
Who was carrying Keisha?
Right. I don't know, she just started making weird noises. We thought it would go away, and it didn't. And then in the morning, she went home.
According to Christy, Keisha went like jelly and started to soil herself. But Christy and Robert never sought any medical attention for the seriously injured girl. They put her into bed before going to sleep themselves. And when they woke the next day, Keisha was dead. What happened next is truly horrific. Christy and Robert did not seek any medical attention or the police. Instead, Christy explained to the undercover police officer what they did with her daughter's body. Robert covered Keisha's tiny body with petrol and then branches before setting them alight in an attempt to burn the body. But that didn't work. So they crudely buried Keisha's charred remains in a shallow grave. The couple then took the undercover police officer to where they disposed of the body. At 1:12 a.m, Christy and Robert were arrested at the same spot where the search for Keisha came to a devastating end.
Today really has been a display of so much grief and anger, particularly here at this unit complex, which has become the focal point for so much of the community since Keisha disappeared 9 months ago now. Certainly tonight, as a large crowd gathers behind me for what would have been a vigil to mark her 7th birthday, that gathering is taking on a very different tone, a lot more serious. And even though those remains that have been found in bushland not very far from here at all are yet to be identified, people already are starting to talk about planning for Keisha's funeral.
Skeletal remains found scattered around the reserve, popular with trail bike riders. An autopsy will be carried out on Monday to determine whether the remains are those of Keisha, who would have turned 7 today. Smith's father says he understands people's anger, but wants to hear the evidence at court before making up his mind.
You've got to believe that your own son couldn't have a part in this, so yeah, that's what I want to believe.
Jim Taupout was like a step-grandfather to Keisha and played with her often.
I miss her so much.
It's been very arduous and very long investigation. And something that I'm proud of the efforts of the police that worked on this case. And we had tremendous community support all along the way. And I think it was simply the case that we never wanted to give up on this matter.
Today, the couple chose not to appear on video link as the matter was heard at Parramatta Local Court. Their lawyer told the court they were too distraught.
So as you said, a public outpouring of emotion obviously started this morning, and I no doubt it'll continue.
I'm hurting, I'm angry, I just want to cry. It's Keisha's birthday.
Tonight, the thoughts of friends and relatives of Keisha Abrahams are firmly with the little girl as they once again hold vigil. Adrian Rochella, ABC News, Sydney.
A candlelight vigil was planned for what would have been Keisha's 7th birthday. Hundreds turning up to show their respect and to voice their anger at just how a mother can be part of the murder of her own daughter. September 2011. The funeral for little Keisha was held. Her father Chris heartbreakingly providing the eulogy, quote, "I want Keisha to leave this earth knowing how much she was loved, and I want her to be put to rest the way she deserves," unquote. Mourners were asked to wear purple, Keisha's favourite colour. Christy and Robert both put in requests to be able to attend the funeral, something that angered Chris and his mother Liz, quote, "My family are the ones left to deal with all of this and arrange the best send-off for Keisha that she deserves. And I'm telling you, they aren't coming." Unquote. September 28, 2011. A public memorial was held for Keisha. Christy and Robert's request to attend were obviously denied.
A choir of Keisha's cousins and friends said goodbye.
It wouldn't be fair to say you're in a better place now because you deserve to be here enjoying your childhood, growing into a woman and experiencing life.
I pray that none of you would have to endure the suffering and the pain that we had to go through.
We never get over something like this. Somehow, together, we learn to cope.
The girl's grandmother was at the church. She didn't speak, relying instead on family and friends to thank the public and police.
She can be never stolen from our memories. She's been stolen from us from Earth, but not from our memories or our hearts.
Father Edward Dooley says mourning for Kaisha Whippet has been huge, and it's time for healing in the family and the community.
Over the course of her short life, several reports to docs were made by family members and neighbours regarding injuries to Kaisha. Christy had kept Kaisha out of school to hide her injuries. When she should have been in kindergarten, Kaisha had attended school just 4 days in two terms. Even then, a teacher saw bruising to her face, and truant officers, who visited 7 times, were always met with a locked door. There was never any urgency to properly assess Kaisha's well-being with her mother by docs. Following Kaisha's death, Christy and Robert took items out of the property in an attempt to hide their roles in her murder. They threw out the clothing Kaisha was wearing that night, along with SIM cards from their phones. To maintain the image, Kaisha was loved and cared for, and they hoped that she would come home. They went out and bought clothes, toys, and a Tinkerbell poster for the little girl's room. Forensic pathologist Dr. Matthew Rod was a medical examiner in charge of Kaisha's autopsy. He found fractures to her teeth and 10 different injuries to her head and body. Her jawbone had been broken in 2 places. Dr. Rod would later testify in court that he would only generally see these injuries in children who had suffered from severe and prolonged physical abuse, that Kaisha would have been in constant and considerable pain. Following her death, Christy and Robert kept Kaisha's tiny body in a suitcase. After several days, they attempted to burn her remains before dumping the suitcase, where police would later recover Kaisha and arrest her mother and stepfather. Before the trial, Christy's neighbour and spokesperson, Alison Anderson, went to see her friend in prison. She flat out asked her why she lied throughout the investigation and left people wondering for months where Kaisha was. That if she wasn't coping and struggling with Kaisha, why hadn't she given the little girl to her or anyone else? Christy would not answer her, causing Alison to lose it and shout at her, telling Christy she was a child killer. Because of this, Alison would be banned from visiting the prison for life. July 18, 2013. As the van carrying Christy Abrahams pulled up at the Sydney Supreme Court for her criminal trial, the reactions were that of anger from the members of the public. They chased the van and yelled insults. The courtroom was standing room only. Christy turned her back on the public gallery and looked only in the direction of the judge.
What we heard was startling. Abrahams admitted she'd given Kaisha a little nudge, then put her in the shower to wake her up, but without success, put her to bed. The next morning, Kaisha was dead. But dental expert Alan Middleton disputes that version, telling the court the fractures to Kaisha's teeth were caused by much more than a little nudge. In fact, he believes Kaisha was hit 4 to 5 times with forces from multiple directions, which left the 6-year-old with fractures equivalent to an adult sporting injury. Inside the court, as Christy Abrahams stood and said the word guilty, she was emotionless. Then, after the judge left the room, there was an eerie silence as everyone just stood watching as Christy Abrahams was led down to the cells.
On the first day of her trial, Christy entered a plea of guilty to the murder of her daughter. This was after the Crown previously rejected her offer to plead guilty to manslaughter. Christy Abrahams was sentenced to serve 22 and a half years in prison, with a non-parole period of 16 years. As her sentence was handed down by Justice Ian Harrison, she showed no reaction. The public gallery, on the other hand, cried for little Kaisha. Justice Harrison addressed Christy, quote, "The trust between a parent and child is that of the highest and utmost importance. She caused the death of her daughter. with the infliction of violent lethal force on what was a vulnerable and defenceless child in her care, who was entitled to expect and receive her attention. Unquote. Justice Harrison found that while she hadn't intended to take Kaisha's life, she had meant to cause grievous bodily harm. He also said he couldn't be sure beyond reasonable doubt who was responsible for the other injuries Kaisha had sustained prior to her death. Justice Harrison said that Christie's version of events was not set in reality, but the evidence could not explain exactly what had happened. Justice Harrison closed in saying, quote, "The death of the deceased is a foreseeable and predictable consequence of preventable cyclic abuse. The offender's failures are mirrored in the failures of others." Unquote. Justice Harrison did find beyond reasonable doubt, however, that Christie had failed to look after Kaisha after she became injured, which amounted to reckless indifference to human life. Robert Smith was tried separately on May 13, 2013. He was sentenced to a minimum of 12 years for manslaughter and being an accessory to murder. He will be eligible for parole next year, in 2025. Christie Abrahams will be eligible for parole in 2027. For her former neighbour and friend Alison Anderson, the sentence was not enough for the loss of a young life. Quote, "It's just horrifying knowing she can be out when she's 46. Does having a bad upbringing and abuse give you the right to go and take people's lives? She knew what she was doing. It's just a cop-out. Kaisha was killed by a cold-blooded murderer." Unquote. The flow-on effect of Kaisha's murder was significant. Alison Anderson, the spokesperson for Christie and Robert throughout the search for Kaisha, felt betrayed once the truth was revealed, which would have been incredibly painful and devastating to learn. Alison had grew up in foster care herself and had been abused, so this whole experience was personal to her. She would later go on to channel these feelings into becoming a qualified youth worker, and she would use her skills to help those who were vulnerable and in need so more children don't slip through the cracks. Kaisha's father, Chris, took the news of losing his only daughter hard, the loss of a second child in a short period of time. He fell into a deep depression. He stopped taking his medication properly or keeping to his diabetic diet. November 2012. Chris Whiphart was found dead in his bed. Complications from his diabetes. Mourning, his mother Liz said that at least now Chris and Kaisha were together. Quote, "If he can't have her down here, well, he'll go up there and have her." Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.